Welcome, everyone, to episode 224 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we are going to preview all four game fives of the second round series that are going to start tonight on Tuesday. Before we get underway, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA pod. In our Twitter bio, you can also find our Twitter handle, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. And we're now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today, as always, is my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
It's going well, Brian. I am puzzled, though, because I'm looking at the NBA playoff standings, and the one team that has a 3-1 lead is not the team that I thought it would be.
No, it certainly isn't. I'm just happy because, like, going into the playoffs, we figured the first round, especially in the East, was going to be pretty easy for the top four seeds to advance. And then in the West, aside from the Portland, OKC, and Denver Spurs series, those were kind of up in the air. But we figured Golden State and Houston was going to advance and set up like just an amazing second round. And so far, I mean, it's lived up to it. We got 3-2-2 series going into Game 5. And then we have, the 1-3-1 series, Bucks-Celtics, has enormous implications for this summer. I'm excited. I'm nervous. So we're just going to go in order in terms of how these games are going to be played. So we're recording this on Tuesday, May 7th, which means tonight is Sixers-Raptors Game 5 and Blazers-Nuggets Game 5. So, Mort, let's start with Sixers-Raptors, since that's the first game on the slate. The Sixers game 3 blew out the Raptors. Game 4, Nick Nurse came back with some pretty smart adjustments. Going into game 4, the day before they announced Pascal Siakam was doubtful with a left calf injury that he may or may not have sustained while tripping Joel Embiid in the fourth quarter of game 3. Siakam did in fact play, but he was pretty ineffective. Whether it was the calf injury or just Embiid's defense on him, whatever, he just didn't do all that much in that game. So instead, after not playing Gasol and Ibaka together at all through games 1-3, they played 23 minutes together in game 4. And Nick Nurse afterwards said, Philly's size was really giving the Raptors trouble. They were getting beat up on the glass. He wanted to try going bigger. And, based on the results, it seemed to work. We also saw a lot more of Kawhi Leonard on Jimmy Butler. That seemed like the obvious adjustment to make after game 3, just because the Sixers had really been picking apart the Raptors with the Jimmy Butler pick and rolls. So especially in the second half when it was getting close late in the game, we saw a lot more of Kawhi on Jimmy, and Kawhi did a very good job shutting Jimmy down. Meanwhile, Joel Embiid woke up the beginning of game, or the morning of game 4, he apparently texted Brett Brown, said he hadn't slept all night, felt awful, had to get an IV. He did play through it, but just wasn't all that effective, not nearly. I mean, 11 points, 8 rebounds, 7 assists. He had a couple of big blocks in Ibaka, but was like a shell of himself from game 3. And then Ben Simmons did not do very much at all for the fourth straight game in the series, which is expected offensively. But I thought defensively he was a little less locked in than he was in games 2 and 3. So, Mort, let's start with, Kawhi first? Like, should we just turn this into 10 minutes of a Kawhi appreciation thread?
Yeah, I think that's fair. Could we run 25?
Yeah, I mean, we could run 3 hours. Like, what he's doing, if it wasn't against my team, I would be much more captivated by this. It's infuriating because it is coming against the Sixers, but like every time he shoots the ball, I think it's going in.
It is, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
He's averaging 38 points, 9 rebounds, and 4 assists in just under 40 minutes. And you know what? This is why you had all those load management games.
Yeah.
Over the course of the season, because he's rested, he's healthy, and he's at the very top of his game. He's now able to play extended minutes. I don't necessarily think that would have been the case had he played all 82.
Oh, yeah.
Simply because of that thigh and the uncertainty of it. Like, he is clearly a lot more effective by simply, Yeah, but having fresh legs. I mean, yeah. You can just sense in the way that he moves. Like, he's got that extra gear. And then when you look at Jimmy Butler or Ben Simmons, like, some of those guys, like, they're gassed a little bit quicker than Kawhi is. Mm-hmm. Kawhi seems to be running on whatever robots run on.
Right, yeah. They refuel his motor oil before every game, and then he just feels great, and he can play 40 minutes. I mean, his true shooting percentage in this series is 72.8%. His effective field goal percentage is 69.1. That's unheard of. Like, there should be more appreciation for, like, how historically dominant he has been. So, if you're the Sixers on one hand, your hope is, okay, well, if Kawhi has one, like, excellent but not historically dominant game, you know, we only lost game 4 by 5 points. We feel good if we can hold him to 30 instead of 38.
Yeah.
But, I mean, then again, it's a, you know, it's 2-2 now. It's effectively a 3-game series. You can expect regression to the mean over the course of an 82-game season, but there's no reason to expect that Kawhi is going to get considerably worse in Game 5 or Game 6 or, you know, God forbid, a Game 7.
Right. So you can't really go with Fred VanVleet and make him an offensive option because he's been horrid this season, this series. You know, who do you really have? You have Danny Green. He's shot under 35%. Marcus Gasol has yet to crack 40% in this series. Kyle Lowry, while having a bounce back game, was it in game? Yeah, was that the game? That was game 4, right?
Yeah, he was better in game
4.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have, you know, so many series right now.
Yeah.
But he's still shooting 38% from the whole series and 20% from downtown. Pascal Siakam, who's now injured, has not hit, you know, his usual high percentage either. They are going to have to live with Kawhi and a hope that someone else steps up. I mean, that's what they have. Like, what's the alternative right here? I mean, Serge Ibaka as well, 37.5%. Like, no one outside of Kawhi is breaking 50% from the field. Siakam is the second highest, and that's at 46. Like, that, this is like the weirdest contrast I've ever seen in a playoff series.
Yeah. I mean, if you're the Sixers, I think the obvious solution, and I think they did this more in games 2 and 3 than they did in game 4, is just double him and trap him and hard hedge and do whatever it takes to make him feel uncomfortable and, like, force him into being a playmaker more than a scorer, which he can do, but he tends to, I mean, I think he had 5 assists and 7 turnovers in game 4. Like, if you can force him to have a negative assist to turnover ratio, that's a win. I think you're right. You live with a Kyle Lowry or Marcus Gasol or an Ibaka beating you over him. And all three of those guys, to their credit, you know, they had been missing in action for a lot of this series, especially in game 3. All three bounced back in game 4. I almost wonder if Siakam's injury was somewhat of a blessing in disguise for them, because they knew, you know, Kawhi's going to drop 35 plus. We were expecting Siakam to be that clear second option, so we only need one of us to go off. But now with Siakam down, like, Lowry, Gasol, they all went into that game knowing, okay, they need more from us because Kawhi can't do everything.
Right. Right. No, I agree. Was there a question in there, Brad?
No, more just a sad observation. I'm still going through, like, the 5 stages of grief about that series because, like, so I know, look, it's a 3-game series, game-to-game momentum. You know, we thought Warriors-Rockets was over in game 2, after game 2, which we'll talk about later. Like,
right.
You can rest these things back and, like, after game 3, it looked like the Sixers were just going to smash, especially with Siakam doubtful in game 4. You know, it looked like they're going to go up 3-1. They're going to cruise to the conference finals, whatever. I just can't help but feel that game 4 is such a missed opportunity for the Sixers that, like, I know they objectively still have a chance in this series, but it feels like that was their chance, and now the Raptors are going to win game 5, and whether they knock them out in 6 or 7... it's hard to see the Sixers winning this series.
Of course you'll say that, because you're the biggest Sixers skeptic there is.
Yeah.
Just to turn it back to Kawhi, just before we move on to the second series,
mm-hmm.
Like, you mentioned Kawhi and then the word uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sorry. Does he ever look uncomfortable on the court? I get that the double team, like, and you know, that he then coughed the ball up a little bit. But he seems confident at virtually everything he does out there.
Yeah.
Like, his confidence level right now, like, it seems unshakable.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing they've done to make him uncomfortable is Simmons, I think, in games 2 and 3 was much better defensively on him than he was in game 4. And then, again, it's the, like, throw double to him. Throw Simmons and Butler. Throw Simmons and Embiid. Throw Simmons and Harris. You just need to get the ball out of his hands by whatever means necessary. But I get that for the Sixers, that's also a scary prospect, because if you're doubling, that means someone is open. And it's like, you get a pit in your stomach when you're like, oh crap, Danny Green has a wide open above the break three. It doesn't look good for you, but you're just banking on, okay, this is a percentage play. Kawhi's shooting 100,000% from the field. All of these other guys have occasionally missed. Let's put it into the hands of someone else and force them to beat us. Even though, you know, again, in an 82-game season, you would not want to leave these guys open on the perimeter. But it just might have to be your option, given how well Kawhi has played.
Yeah, just basically play the percentages based off of this series and hope for the best.
Right. I will say, so I wrote a thing on Ben Simmons today, and I want to talk about him briefly, but that's at thebasketballwriters.com. And Mort, are you tired of clickbait, ads, pop-up videos, talking head hyperbole, big market bias, and data selling? Are you tired of soap operas, wild speculation, and unnamed sources? Are you tired of padding the stats of CEOs and shareholders while your favorite content creators, like Mort and I, get paid pennies for their work? At bballwriters.com, they are too. That's why they created The Basketball Writers. At bballwriters.com, they concentrate on just the game and everything they love about it. The NBA, WNBA, EuroLeague, fantasy basketball, the draft, and many more corners of the hoops universe they're soon to explore. All in one place on a blazingly fast, clean site that lets you choose which writer to directly support while still enjoying all the content from their whole team. Elevate the conversation, elevate the game. They'll see you at bballwriters.com, and don't forget to enter the code THENBAPOD for 10% off your annual, monthly, or daily subscription. That is the NBA pod for 10% off. So I put an article up there today about Ben Simmons and about it. So like Embiid, at least in game 4, you know, did not play well, was nowhere near 100%. So I think you can at least somewhat excuse that. Simmons, on like the third possession of the game, falls completely asleep. Kyle Lowry blows by him for a layup. And the second I saw that, I was like, oh my God. This is going to be a bad Ben Simmons game at the worst possible time. I think there were a couple other possessions like throughout the game where the communication on defense was just so bad. Like there is one where he goes for a steal behind Kawhi, trips over his own feet, so he's like stumbling behind Kawhi as Kawhi runs down the court. He recovers, and like him, Tobias, and Embiid are all there, all of whom could very easily close out, but none of them communicate, and Kawhi drains a wide-open three. And then later, a similar situation where Simmons tries to fight through a screen, like, kind of, again, falls over his feet. Should have been like, hey, James Ennis, go cover him, because I can't. I am literally tripping out of bounds. But instead, kind of just, like, got mad and then belatedly pointed at Kawhi as he's rising up for a three, and Ennis is like, yo, bro, like, what are you doing? It was just, like, offensively, we know in this series he's not going to do much because Kawhi is on him. I think defensively, especially with Embiid limited in game 4, that was what was the most infuriating to me. But also, like, offensively, they are going to need more from him moving forward if the Raptors are going to put Kawhi on Jimmy. Like, there was at least one possession, and I couldn't find it last night as I was going through to write this article, but there was one possession where Fred VanVleet was on Ben Simmons. And Fred VanVleet is giving up nearly a foot to Ben Simmons. That should be, like, he should go into kill mode when that happens. And he didn't. He was just so passive throughout that game that, like, I think that's more than anything the key to game 5 is which Ben Simmons shows up tonight.
Yeah. Yep, I would agree.
So we are usually talking about like 82 games players versus like 16 game players. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not ready to say that Ben Simmons isn't a 16 game player.
Yeah.
I think he can be. Yeah. I think he can get there. The thing is, his offensive weaknesses are just so apparent. And when he then compounds that with these mental lapses of games that he does mm-hmm. have once in a while, mm-hmm. it just becomes ugly. Now, fair, he's 22. Right. He's allowed to, you know, to have games where he's just off, and yeah. and like that's a learning process. You know, we do have this tendency of looking at Ben as somewhat of like a finished product. I think in part because he missed his rookie season, I'm guessing. But yeah, he's still young. There's still time. Having said that, you know, there are some concerns moving forward, especially if he's not willing to like raise up to the big stage. Like, Joel Embiid is just different. He's wired differently. Like, he wants it. He actively wants it. He can go on one leg and he will still go, yeah, I want this. I want that. Give me the ball 35 times in the first quarter. I want this.
Yeah.
He's just wired that way. Ben is more laid back in that sense. He doesn't really strive for, you know, the marquee, and that's perfectly fine. However, he will still need to hype himself out during games where his presence is needed to the extent that it was in game four. Yeah. And that's a learning process, and that's a learning curve. Now, I can't speak about him in terms of like as much as the Sixers staff can. Like, where do they stand with him? Like, do they think he's got what it takes to be a valuable contributor constantly over the next 10 years in playoff settings? I don't know. Like, ask them. But from where I'm sitting, I'm 10% nervous.
Yeah. I mean, I think his defensive versatility sets him apart. And as long as he's locked in on that end of the court, which he has been for most of the playoffs, that gives him a nice, solid floor, even if he isn't doing much offensively. But And I think also part of this falls on the coaching staff. Like, especially in minutes where Embiid's off the floor and these Mike Scott at the five lineups, I love them, but they got to go. It's just not happening, especially against Gasol and Ibaka. They need to be more creative in the ways in which they deploy Ben Simmons. Like, I mean, we've been saying it for years, and then, you know, he has this game against Brooklyn, game three, where Embiid sits out. They use him more as a screener and a rim roller, and, like, all mm-hmm. of a sudden he looks incredible. And it's like, and then Embiid comes back, and they go away from that again. It's like, these should be staple sets in your playbook. You should be running at least like 10 of these a game where Simmons is being used off the ball, especially if Jimmy's being used at the point guard. Run pick and rolls with Jimmy and Simmons, and then run Simmons mm-hmm. to the rim. Like, there are ways to use him that they just fall into the trap of hiding him in the dunker spot. And, you know, there were a couple plays in game four where he left buckets on the floor. Like, there was one in transition where they're running a 4-on-1 and is passed back to Simmons. Simmons, maybe he was afraid that Kyle Lowry could shift over and draw an offensive foul, but, and so he passes it to Tobias, and then Tobias goes up for a layup and Serge blocks it. You can't come up empty-handed on a 4-on-1. Part of me thinks he's afraid of drawing free throws. Like, I noted this in my article today, but he averaged 5.4 free throw attempts during the regular season per game. He's taken 3 free throws in this series. 3. And he's missed all 3. And, like, I know he's a crappy free throw shooter. He shot 60% from the line this year. But there's a value of just drawing fouls, getting into the bonus more quickly in any quarter, and getting guys in foul trouble. Like, Toronto is very limited in terms of their size. It's Gasol, Ibaka, and now a somewhat hobbled Siakam. If you can get any of those guys in foul trouble, that is a huge swing, especially when the variance of a one game, you know, now we're again in a 3-game series effectively. If you can get one guy in foul trouble, that can swing one game, and that's all you need at this time of year. So
even if you leave points on the floor,
actually. Right. Yeah, like I would love it if you can get him in foul trouble and hit both of your free throws, but even if you can't, at least you're causing them to shift their playing style. If Gasol picks up 2 early fouls or Siakam picks up 2 early fouls, that's sending him to the bench. That's forcing them into rotations that they would otherwise prefer. Like, it forces them out of their usual rotation structure, which makes them uncomfortable.
But we've talked about that like a million times in terms of you know, Ben not being when he's a rim roller.
Yeah.
You know, he will just automatically get fouled more because he's actively going for lobs and for dunks and for drives. Like, obviously, the more he plays around the basket, the more he'll get hacked.
Yeah.
Like, it's just common sense. Yeah.
Yeah. So what's your prediction for Game 5? It's in Toronto. I think they're favored by 6. Who are you taking?
I'm not going to say the Raptors. I'm just going to say Kawhi.
That's reasonable. Yeah. Yeah. That's... call me a pessimist, but I feel like they'll let go of the rope. And I would be very pleasantly surprised if the Sixers win tonight. But I think the Raptors... Kawhi is unstoppable. And
he's got a 50-pointer in him, right?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, like, looking ahead, I'm very excited. If the Raptors and Bucks do advance, Kawhi versus Giannis in a playoff series is going to be bananas.
My God. Yeah. I remember actually asking my Danish audience that before the season started. I made a poll on Facebook, I remember. Like, who of these two would you go with? And I think it was somewhat 50-50 when everything was said and done.
Yeah, and it still, frankly, might be.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, let's move into Denver-Portland now. Game 3, I admittedly did not make it to all 4 overtimes. I was watching it. We had friends in town this weekend, so we had gotten home. I turned on the game at the end of the 4th quarter. I make it through the first 2, and then my wife came down an hour later to find me on the couch asleep. So I caught the rest of it the next morning. But Nikola Jokic plays 65 minutes in a quadruple overtime game that the Nuggets lose. And you're thinking, oh my God, they have to play in less than 48 hours. This guy just played effectively 2 full games. There's no way. This is over. The Nuggets are going to lose game 4. And the Blazers are going to close them out in 6. The Nuggets bounce back resoundingly. Jamal Murray has a monster game, 34 points, 10 of 20 shooting, hits all 11 free throws, including some clutch ones late. Jokic has just been a monster in this series. So the Nuggets end up taking it, and now the series is knotted at 2-2 going back to Denver in Game 5. What do you think about Jokic in this series, Mort?
You know, first and foremost, let me just say that this is the best series in the playoffs so far, and I'm actually going to go one step further. This has been the best series I've seen at the very least for a couple of seasons.
Wow.
I love it. I absolutely love it. Both teams are extremely unselfish. The execution level is so high. It's intense. Yeah. There isn't a whole lot of talk about the refs, which, oh, thank God.
Right.
And they, you know, the level of individual talent is there as well. Like, it's just got everything. This should be an instant classic series.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to answer your question specifically about Jokic, I'm remembering before this season some site, I don't know if it was 538 or whatever, like, did this salary projection, like what certain players should be paid compared to what they were actually paid. And some of the, you know, I think they used Carmelo Anthony for the year before as an example of a player being drastically overpaid.
Mm-hmm.
And then they came to Jokic. And Jokic was, I think it was something to the tune of he should have earned like $60 or $70 million per year at the very least, simply because he's so versatile and offers so much. And looking at him now, I'm like, that seems low.
Yeah.
He's doing everything. Like, the amount of touches he gets, and I think ESPN touched on that, like, he was just getting so many more touches than virtually everyone, like over 200 a game.
Mm-hmm.
Everything flows through him, but even so, he doesn't dominate the ball to unnecessary extents. Like, he will give it up and let Jamal Murray run a high pick and roll. He'll give it up and let Gary Harris create for himself, like, or Will Barton or Malik Beasley. But, I mean, he's just so adaptable. You can use him in whatever setting, and he'll figure out a way to be effective. Yeah. I'm constantly blown away by him, but this series in particular, like, I'm in awe all the time. I mean, I can't... Here we have this chubby Serbian center right. who somehow played, you know, 2 games in 1,
yeah.
came out alive...
I know.
I don't know how.
I know. The and biggest upset of the playoffs.
Right. And then came back, you know, 2 days later and gave them a win. by, again, just playing fundamentally sound basketball where, you know, he's made the right passes, read the defense right, hit open shots. Like, he's phenomenal, man.
Yeah.
Phenomenal.
Yeah. Imagine if he wasn't chubby and white and
European. Oh! Oh,
imagine
yeah.
how good he would be then.
Yep. Imagine if he had been a U.S. college player
yeah.
who was ripped. Yep.
Yep. Yep. I'm sure the AAU circuit, he would have learned all of these skills.
Yep.
I know. I mean, I agree with you that this series has been like, I think they put it, they said it on either Inside the NBA or one of the, yeah, I think it was on Inside the NBA where like, or maybe it was just during the Celtics-Bucks game, but they were like, this is the best series that none of you are watching. Or like, none of you aside from like hardcore NBA fans. And it's true. Like, it's been an incredibly entertaining series. And part of me thinks it's like, the consolation bracket, like whoever makes it out of Warriors Rockets is going to be so heavily favored against whichever team makes it out here that you just assume like, cool, one of these teams is going to make it to the Western Conference Finals and then get smacked. But there's still value in that. And both of these teams, especially the Nuggets, they're so young. Like getting this type of playoff experience, surviving a 7-game series in round one against Greg Popovich and the Spurs is a huge developmental milestone for these guys, for Jokic, Murray, Gary Harris, all of these guys. Being in a hotly contested conference semifinals like this, where, again, you're going back to Game 5, tied 2-2, now you've kind of been there. Now you know what the pressure is like after facing Round 1. Like, these are all just building blocks for these guys, even for Dame and CJ.
Yeah.
I mean, and for, like, Rodney Hood. I mean, none of these guys are, like, so washed that it's meaningless long-term moving forward. I think, I know you wrote a good article for Forbes about the Portland side of things, though, how it might be difficult to repeat this kind of run. Like, this might be their best chance to do this type of a thing just because of how they're set up salary-wise.
Right. Thank you for that segue.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yes, yes,
yeah. Sir. So basically, they're pretty screwed cap-wise
right.
Because of the Evan Turner and Myles Leonard contracts that we have talked about ad nauseum.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, they're actually limited to like the tax MLE
mm-hmm.
this summer if they really want to, you know, re-sign one of these guys. But thing is, and Iskander and Rodney Hood, both of them have played so well these playoffs that they're bound to get bigger offers. Like,
yeah.
maybe that tax Emily is allocated or reserved, rather, for Seth Curry, maybe. Mm. But ultimately, Portland, you know, they have one bullet, left in the chamber, as I wrote, and that's the kids. Mm. And I know you're not high on the kids in Portland, and I get that. They're not picked high. There are some obvious flaws with all of them virtually, but I still think that that could become something, because should Portland lose Cantor and Hood and maybe even Seth Curry, like, they would have to immediately give minutes to Anthony Simons,
yeah.
Gary Trent, more minutes to Zach Collins as well, and, you know, Scalabissier and whoever they pick at number 25, and make no mistake, they should absolutely spend their pick because, yeah, they need this. So they could have potentially 5 young players on the roster next season that would all have to play minutes. That could be a godsend if just one or two of them really break out. And, spoiler, Zach Collins mm-hmm. is probably going to be my pick for MIP next year.
Ooh, nice. Yeah, it's not that I'm not high on Portland's young guys. It's just that I remember you went into the year, like, we did the league pass rankings. You had them really high because you were excited to see the young guys. And I was like, these guys aren't going to play this year.
Like, yeah, you were right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. Like, that is what they may have to bank on moving forward. It'll almost be like the Toronto model pre-Kawhi, where you had that, you know, the bench mob of Fred VanVleet, DeLon Wright, Siakam, Poeltl. Like,
right.
all of those guys were young. They drafted them late. And then, you know, Siakam pops. And now you've got, you know, you have the one guy who you need. You have, like, a bunch of lottery tickets, and you hit on the one. And I think right. you're right. That's probably what Portland is heading toward, just because of the salary issues that you mentioned. I mean, it is worth noting they will have Yusuf Nurkic back next year, which will change things for them as well.
We don't know when next year, though.
Right, and we don't know what shape he's going to be in and all of that. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, you're right. Zach Collins is a very good MIP pick early on. So, again, we've got a game five tonight. What's your prediction?
You know what? I'm not going to give you a prediction. I just hope this goes seven. I just hope we see the same kind of caliber of games, and it goes seven, and then I don't care about who comes out of it.
That's reasonable. It's fine. That's reasonable. So I feel like your best bet in that case is probably, like, if Denver goes up, I think Portland can tie it at home. But if yeah. Portland wins this one, I mean, Denver...
It's probably series over. Yeah.
Yeah, like, Denver could win in Portland. They did in game four when they were facing long odds as well. But it just feels like the best bet for this to go seven, at least, is each team holds serve at home. And then we get probably right. an instant classic game seven.
You know what would be extra dope if it was all road wins here on out?
Oh, man. Oh, my God. I like seeing the home crowds explode, though. That's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did see someone... I didn't fact check this, so take this with a grain of salt, but... I saw someone on Twitter say, like, oh, no, this is actually true. Holy God. If all three of the series that are at 2-2 go to Game 7, all three will be on Sunday, and you also have Game of Thrones.
Oh.
That's just,
that's
like...
tough.
Yeah, that's just literally do not, like, carve out a spot on your couch for 10 hours.
Yeah.
Order in some pizza. You're not going to move. Turn off your pedometer that day. You're getting like 300 steps, and that's just going back and forth to the bathroom. That's about it. Yeah, it's kind of weird that they have it set up like that, because there's no game scheduled Saturday, but it could
yeah,
be.
Yeah, I have a, you know what, when someday when we're done talking about the playoffs here, I'll have a big rant about that as a European. Oh. I need early games on Saturday.
Mm. Well, you gotta assume one of the Sunday games would be early. I can't imagine all three would be.
Yeah, but that's not enough, Brian.
Yeah, that's hey, if I want to avoid one of these series running into Game of Thrones. I was mad that Portland Nuggets Game 4 ran into it. Okay, let's move now to Boston-Milwaukee. The one series that we thought was the most competitive after Game 1 when Boston... I mean, really trounced Milwaukee on their home floor. Looked like the Bucks might be rattled. Looks like the Celtics might be finding their mojo after a season of a lot of locker room turmoil.
They did. Just for one
for
game.
For one game, right. So then the Bucks come back, win game two, even it up. And then they go to Boston. And game three was close for at least the first half. The Bucks kind of opened up in the third quarter and ran away with it. And then game four, the Celtics were up early. Marcus Smart comes back. You get the big emotional lift from that. Middleton and Giannis get into foul trouble early in the third quarter. And it's like, oh man, the Celtics have a real shot here. And then George Hill and Pat Connaughton outplay Kyrie Irving, Terry Rozier, Marcus Smart, and the Bucks, you know, pour it on in the fourth quarter. Giannis starts snarling and dunking and doing all the Giannis things. And now Milwaukee's suddenly up 3-1, and Boston's on the ropes.
Yeah, I regret what I said last time when I said that if Pat Connaughton is closing out games for you, it's not great.
Yeah.
You know what? I mean, I'm happy to be wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was a good, I forget who wrote it. I think it was on ESPN. And I apologize for not remembering the author, but there was a good article about, like, I guess Giannis and Pat were, like, Giannis is, you know, a noted workout fanatic. They would have to, like, lock the doors of the facility to keep him out of there. But I guess Connaughton's the other guy who's just, like, always in the gym with him. And they have forged an unlikely friendship because of it. So maybe that's part of it. He's, like, Connaughton has, you know, kind of wormed his way into favor with the franchise player, and like Giannis is telling Bud, like, hey, no, actually I work out with this guy all the time, he's really good, trust him.
Well, I mean, just to clarify, I never thought that Pat Connaughton was like a bad player,
right?
I just didn't think he would be, you know, a 25 or in this case almost 29 minute player in the second round of the playoffs. Yeah. That's just not the way I figured his career would go, but kudos, like, for crying out loud, that's awesome. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Well, I mean, also, Brogdon has still yet to return. We don't know his status for Game 5, but that has been part of it. But also, like, I mean, George Hill was phenomenal last night. Truly, like, it's not an exaggeration to say he outplayed Kyrie Irving. Like, Celtics fans were readily saying that last night. So, I don't want to dig the grave on the Celtics yet. Like, Bye Felicia exists for a reason.
Yeah.
I do think we need to talk about Kyrie, though, because he has been awful in this series.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after game three, he's like, don't worry, you're not going to see another 8 of 22 night from me. And then it goes 7 of 22 in game four.
Which makes him technically right.
Right, yeah, in his credit.
Yeah.
But to me, it just seems like, and there were a lot of shots, even early in the game last night, where when it was close, where the Celtics just seem to be devolving into hero ball. Like, they're not swinging it back and forth, and they're not trying to go and attack weak side defense. It's like Kyrie will dribble it baseline and then turn around and take, like, a off-balance 12-footer.
Right.
Which just... I'm so surprised that, especially after Game 1, it really genuinely seemed like the Celtics were at least going to put all the regular season BS behind them and were, like, focused on the task at hand. And then in the three games since, Kyrie has just been so bad.
Yeah, I don't have a response to it. I mean, he was just fantastic in Game 1, hitting, you know, all kinds of weird shots.
Yeah.
But maybe that's part of it, because, like, a lot of those shots early on in Game 1, you know, especially the three really difficult ones that dropped and were all net, you know, what if those had been missed? Mm. Like, it's not necessarily good shots, if you catch my drift.
Right.
Like, he really is one of those guys, like, when he hits shots, obviously he's on a roll, and, like, you can look at what he provides you. But the shot selection is always kind of iffy.
Yeah.
He's not up on, you know, Steph Curry territory yet, because when you look at Steph Curry in isolation, like, those are horrible shots. But because it's Steph Curry specifically, like, oh, it's fine.
Right.
Yeah. Irving is just not the same caliber of shot maker, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
And he really has a high level of difficulty on most of his attempts. I don't necessarily think he's having that bad of a series as we've talked about, because he's still getting, you know, he's actually getting a lot of assists. He's really trying to initiate his teammates.
Mm-hmm.
I just think he's not hitting.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's you're right. Like, if he hits these difficult shots, we have a much different conversation about him now, and he has proved capable of doing so in the past. He is, you know, he is one of the best ball handlers in the league. Like, he is very crafty off the dribble. He can do this. But when you have this much talent on your team, is that the most efficient way to go about it?
Yeah.
Probably not. Like, it makes me wonder. I mean, I'm not saying this series is over in five. I think there's at least a world in which the Celtics could win this, and I mean, they could theoretically still win the series. It's not over. I don't think it's entirely likely. So, like, looking ahead to Game 5, I'm wondering if they should play more through Horford. And
I mean, yeah.
Right? And just, like, trust. Because he is the one who, of anyone on that team, I don't trust Jason Tatum right now with his shot selection.
Mm-hmm.
Marcus Morris, he's probably trust more than Tatum at this point, at least knowing his limitations. But I think, not that Horford should take, he shouldn't lead the team in field goal attempts, but at least use him more as, like, a hub on your offense and get Kyrie off the ball more and see if that can open some things up. But I also think, I mean, the Bucks are playing, like, the first half of last night's game was just ugly, and, like, both teams were just missing bad shots. But the second half, the Bucks were just so locked in defensively. I think, for all of the slander that the Celtics are getting today, I think the Bucks do deserve some real credit for, you know, especially after the Game 1 loss. Like, that could have, like, shaken them to their core. But instead, Bud was like, no, just trust what we've been doing all season. We've been playing great defense. We can run through Giannis offensively. We're going to keep shooting threes. And they've stuck to it. They've been switching more, which they didn't do during the regular season, and that's really thrown the Celtics off. But This is a testament to the Bucks and how good they've been, that the Celtics, who have all of this talent, who entered the season as the clear favorites in the East, are now one game away from vacation.
Yeah. I mean, you're absolutely right. This Bucks team, you know, we always talk about their system that was brought in by Coach Bud.
Mm-hmm.
Like the more threes. Giannis hitting insane field goal percentages around the rim. Him getting a lot of free throws. Well, the defense.
Yeah.
The defense, man. Everything seems to be clicking. Brook Lopez, you know, we've been talking about his three-point field goal percentage this year, or his three-point makes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was averaging two blocks and was, like, one of the most stable interior defensive presences, like, in the entire league.
Yeah.
But that's not what we talked about. Giannis can effectively guard 1 through 5.
Right.
Middleton can switch around, like, just this, you know, kind of just pick and choose his own spots defensively. Eric Bledsoe is a bulldog.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, even Malcolm Brogdon, who hasn't played, you know, for a while now, defensive active all the time, long arms, can really change a lot of looks. Like, there's just so much firepower defensively, and we saw it being applied in the second half.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, also, I think for the Celtics to win Game 5, they're going to need a big Gordon Hayward game. He's been very quiet in this series. I think Middleton's been doing a really good job on him in particular. But
right.
They need someone. Like, their bench scored...
Tatum.
Their bench just scored 7 points in Game 4. They need more. Like, the starting five is loaded, but maybe it's smart. I mean, you know, he shot 1 of 7 from 3. It is all of his field goal attempts were 3-pointers in Game 4, which is the quintessential Marcus Smart game. And I love... Did you see Giannis afterward? Where a reporter asks him, did Marcus Smart make an impact on this game? And he looks at, he like doesn't say anything. He just looks at the stat sheet and then kind of just chuckles. It's like,
and I don't think that was mean-spirited by any stretch, by the way. I think that was just him actually kind of trying to remember the course of the game and go, I don't remember Marcus Smart being that effective. Let me just look at the game log.
Right. It was like him and Kawhi have the two best low-key trolls of the playoffs so far, I think, when Kawhi the other day was like, oh no, they're definitely making me break a sweat. Okay, Kawhi, shove it. But all right, so prediction for Game 5. Do you think this one's over?
Well, I want redemption for myself.
Okay.
You know, because I said Bucks in 4 or 5.
Yep.
And then I flip-flopped because I'm a coward.
Yep.
I'm always a bigger coward than Ben Simmons.
Yep.
So, obviously, yeah. No, so I hope to redeem myself and the Bucks go, you know, 4-1.
That's reasonable. I had Bucks in 6 before the series, but yeah, I mean, it's looking increasingly likely that it's Bucks in 5. Unless Kyrie shows up, but I just think that Milwaukee crowd is going to be bonkers. And I think Giannis tastes blood now. He wants to end this thing. He knows Sixers-Raptors could go 6 or 7, or will go at least 6, could go 7. He wants a nice rest before the conference finals.
Maybe that's the prediction here, Bri.
What?
What does Giannis go for?
Ooh. Well, let's see. He had, 39-16 in Game 4?
Yeah, and he's figuring out Horford now.
Yeah. Let's say, well, the question
is... I'm going to go big. I'm going to go real big.
But the question is, do the Celtics keep it close enough for him to put up big numbers, or do they just get routed?
I think they do. It's the Celtics after all. I think they do.
Yeah. Okay, what's yours?
A double nickel.
Ooh. Wow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I was going to go 42-16 or something like that.
No, I think he's so pissed off at the first couple of games where they got the best of him.
Mm-hmm.
And he just couldn't really break through. And now I think he's like, he wants to prove something.
I could see that.
I could see it. Yeah. Like a double nickel and then of course 15 or 16 rebounds to boot and 7 assists. Like it's I could see it.
God. I hope so. It's been really fun to see him. And now he's taking threes and hitting them. Like, the whole league is screwed. Just give the Bucks the next 5 titles.
Yep. I am so glad that I hitched my own wagon to his in terms of believing in him for the next, like, 7 to 10 years.
I mean, who hasn't?
No, you know what? There are a lot of people who brought up the same, like, Ben Simmons problem with him
coming into this year as well.
Like, there's a cap on Giannis because, much like Ben Simmons, he can't shoot. Like, you saw it. You were on Twitter. But
Giannis takes the shots. He doesn't hit them at a high percentage, but he... Comparing those two, their shooting... Like, Ben Simmons is effectively Markel Fultz in terms of his inability to shoot.
Well, yeah. But you don't have to convince me of that. Yeah, but you were on Twitter last summer. Know, come on, know, you saw it.
It was dumb at the time. It, like,
yes.
Yeah, no. Giannis, I'm not saying he's a high... Like, I think he is shooting a higher percentage from three than... Like, this is kind of an outlier for him. But I also don't think we're far away from a world where he hits, like, 35% from three. And at that point, it's game over. There's no stopping him.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, no. And, you know, the biggest thing for me is, does he become an 80% free throw shooter?
Mm. I hope not. I would like to watch competitive basketball for the next 5 years, and that would ruin it. All right, let's wrap up with Warriors-Rockets, which is, much like we thought, Celtics-Bucks was the most competitive series after one or two games. We thought Warriors-Rockets was the only one that was not competitive. The Warriors, you know, they won two close games in games one and two, but it just looked like whatever, they were going to continue riding Kevin Durant in clutch or in crunch time, and the Rockets just had no answer. The Rockets came back with a nice big counterpunch, win an overtime game in game three, take game four as well. James Harden's eye is not looking great, but his step back three definitely is. Chris Paul is also starting to really get under the skin of some of the Warriors players. I believe Chris Haynes had an article today about that, where, you know, the series got a little chippy last night. Kevin Durant especially had some words for Chris Paul, and then at the end of the game, he had that weird, like, kind of leg kick thing on Andre Iguodala, who is now... He apparently left the arena last night with a big limp, but they say he's going to be fine for Game 5 on Wednesday. First of all, like, we had the Kawhi Leonard appreciation segment, so I feel like we owe the same to Kevin Durant.
Mm-hmm.
How, oh, yeah. Like, he has been so outrageously good. It's like watching him and Kawhi, it's like watching clones of each other. Like, no matter how good of defense you play on him, he's just, it lights out. And he got that wide open three. You know, they're down three at the end of game four. It was probably a 28 footer, but he got that. And I was like, oh my God, this thing's going to overtime.
KD right now is proving that point that I talked about just moments ago about in regards to Giannis. I think we talked about the last time. Like, everyone was on team Steph, you know? Is Durant really that player still? Yeah. Right. Newsflash, he's still that guy. I mean, look, he's getting to the line, what, way over 10 times a game. Let me see. 11 as well. Like, he's got 47 free throws in four games.
Yeah.
He's taking 25 shots a game. He's averaging 36. He's hitting 48 from downtown, 85% from the line. You know, he's actually having a modest 46% shooting from the field.
Right, like, casual. He's shooting
very casual.
Worse from
worse
from the field than he is from 3-point range.
And it doesn't feel like it. I should add, like, he's just so long, man, and he understands where to take his shots. He's in that 30s age now, where everything is about intelligence level.
Mm-hmm.
Of understanding. Oh, okay. If I go here, just one more centimeter here, one more centimeter there, I can get my shot off this and this way. Like, he's thinking the game. And when he's asked, can you score basically at will? He's like, yeah, yeah. And
yeah.
I need him to do more still.
Yeah, well, especially because Steph and Klay have been...
Right.
I mean, Steph's shooting 26% from three. Klay's at 30.8%. You would hope there would be some regression to the mean, but maybe they both have, like, hand or finger injuries, and maybe those are affecting their shot in ways that they won't admit publicly, at least. So, yeah, I mean, it feels like if those two are off in game five, it feels like you're just going to need a 50 spot from KD, maybe.
Yep, that's what I'm thinking.
Especially, I mean, I don't know how hurt Iguodala is. I think unless his leg has to get amputated, he's going to play game five.
Right. And even if that happens, he'll play.
Right, just hop around one leg. Yeah. Yep. But still, like, if he's hobbled in any way, that's even more of a green light for Harden, which means Durant is going to have to counter that, because Harden's been great.
I mean, yeah.
it's been so fun. Like, this has just been such high-level basketball, and I know they're, you know, the Warriors, and well, both of these teams, honestly, will complain to the refs about any foul ever, but it feels like at least the national conversation about this series has not been the officiating since game one, thankfully. Right. But yeah, I mean...
Well, maybe not on telecasts.
Yeah.
NBA Twitter is still very much at it.
Of course, but... You know, both of these teams, like, they're just running such short benches. I mean, Looney was the only guy to play more than 15 minutes in Game 4 off the bench for the Warriors, and the Rockets are just at a 7-man rotation now. It's Rivers and Shumpert, like, a little bit of Nene and a little bit of Gerald Green, but that's it. It's just like, these are our guys, we're going to go down swinging. Eric Gordon has been phenomenal in this series. I know he's only 2 of 12 last night from 3, but he's been so good. He's been so good for them. He's giving them, because like CP3 has not been as offensively potent as you would necessarily hope from a sidekick, but like Eric Gordon's just filling that role for him.
Right, Paul's been, you know, he's been selective. Is that the kind of word to use?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, he was really good when it seemed like they were hunting mismatches with him on Steph last night. So, like, they would actively try to search out screen and roll opportunities in which they could get Steph onto CP3, and then he would just drive to the rim for a floater. But, yeah, I mean, he hasn't been, like, gunning for his shots, like, I mean, a lot of Houston's offense is just James Harden dribbling for 20 seconds and then going for a step back three, which I think if you're the Warriors, you live with. Like, I know he can hit that shot, but it's not necessarily good or high percentage offense. It's just like sometimes he's going to hit those shots, and what can you do? Nothing.
Yeah. I forget who made this joke. Could have been Rob Perez. But just imagine Harden and KD on the same team.
Let me think back. Yeah.
That could have been so interesting, huh?
I know.
Yeah.
But, I mean, not to relitigate that, but I don't know if James Harden turns into this type of a player if he's...
Well, if they traded Russ's ass, they probably would have.
Right. That's the problem. But, like, I mean, we're seeing it in Boston. Like, the too many mouths to feed problem. Like, Harden became this good because he was the number one option for so many years. And then, I mean, I think a lot of it is what Donovan Mitchell is going through in the playoffs now, where you're the number one option, teams harp on your weaknesses, you spend the whole summer trying to figure out counters to those weaknesses, and then you turn into, you know, I know Zach Lowe has been harping on this year with Harden's floater in particular. Yeah. Where he's just hitting such a high percentage of them, and he didn't have that in his bag as much before this year. And, like, if you're playing next to KD, yes, he makes things easier for you, substantially so, but I don't know if he ever develops the efficiency of his step back three or the efficiency of his floater in the same way that he does when he's the number one option on his own team. But,
no, but they may have won rings without him developing those things, and then you have to gauge, well, what's more important, right?
Right. That is probably true. I'll give you that.
By the way, can we just talk about Clint Capela for a second?
Yeah.
Like, for you know, if you had told me a week ago that Houston and Golden State would be 2-2 with Clint Capela scoring just 9.3 points a game, I would have told you to F off.
Right.
Because... that just does not sound credible by any stretch. But here we are. I mean, I thought he would play such a much, you know, such a big role, especially with Bogut being slow-footed and with Golden State generally lacking size. Mm-hmm. But that hasn't been him. That's been P.J. Tucker.
Yeah.
And again, just, I know we mentioned Lowe all the time, but he does have good numbers. Like, P.J. Tucker has 9 offensive rebounds over the past, like, 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what? That's, how? How does that make sense?
He's been phenomenal. I mean, I think
because
Cousins is out, they don't, mm-hmm. like, the Warriors have been starting the Hamptons 5, so the Rockets don't need to counter with as much size as they would have with Cousins in. So Capella has just not been as effective against that smaller lineup with Draymond Green at center, and PJ Tucker at center, like, matches up well size-wise with Dre, although he's been doing, like, he's mostly been on KD, and prior to game 4, Ben Simmons and PJ Tucker have the most thankless task in the league right now, because these guys are going to get 35 plus points a night, and you just have to make it hard on them. And I think, you know, Tucker has been doing a pretty good job on KD. Like, he's going to get his, but as you said, he's shooting only 46% from the field this series. That's pretty good. That's about the best you could do on him.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's... Tucker's been doing a very, very good job in this series, and you're seeing why they, why he's such an important part of this team, even though, he'll never stand out on a box score. He'll rarely stand out on a box score. He's not going to put up 30-plus points like James Harden, but right. that like, gritty... Just play good defense, box out, get offensive rebounds. That is just as valuable.
And that is a role player. Yeah. That is what teams are looking for in the summer. I'm going off on tangent here, but it makes sense. Don't worry. Like, when teams go out and overpay guys, like, let's go back to Portland and Evan Turner. Mm-hmm. That's what they're hoping for. Yeah. That they're hoping for a guy to turn into... Not P.J. Tucker specifically, but a guy who has similar value and effectiveness on the court. Like, one who can add significant layers to an already established team.
Mm-hmm.
Like, P.J. Tucker is, like, the perfect role player on the perfect team at the perfect time.
Yeah.
And it just works. He's the best 6'5 center in the league.
He really is, though. It's a fair way of putting it.
I'm very, very impressed with Houston because they did not start the year out well.
Yeah.
And that's an understatement, but they've come roaring back and they seem to be just chugging along nicely. And that's without Trevor Ariza, which I don't know how they pulled this off, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of it, Austin Rivers has been surprisingly big for them.
Yeah.
The Shumpert, like, Daryl Morey, I think Masai, as we talked about at the end of the regular season, I think he's going to win Executive of the Year. I think Daryl Morey deserves a lot of credit for the way he added pieces to this team, knowing that he couldn't go into the luxury tax.
Right.
Because that was very difficult for them to get under it in the first place. Like, that alone was really impressive. But then also getting Fareed, Rivers, Shumpert, really, really good work from Daryl Morey. And we're seeing it pay off.
Yeah. It's almost like he got more creative the more limited he was in his flexibility.
Yeah. Which I feel like we saw with David Griffin in Cleveland, too.
Yep. That is very much true. By the way, I need to put this Cleveland joke in because I forgot about it earlier.
Uh-oh.
So we've seen Rodney Hood and George Hill play their asses off lately.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I don't even have to make the joke because you're already laughing. You know what I mean.
Right, yeah. It's just so strange that they couldn't do this last year. It's really weird. I don't know what changed.
No. I wonder if that's what some of the stars are talking about when they say, LeBron playing with LeBron. I don't know, man.
Yeah.
I wonder.
Yep. All right, so game 5, Warriors-Rockets. Who you got?
I have no idea.
Right?
Like, literally, like, you know, I can lean one way in most of these series. Yeah. Like, I'm leaning Toronto. I'm probably, if you know, guns in my head, I'm probably leaning at Denver.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm definitely leaning Milwaukee. But yeah. This one, I have no idea. Yeah. Like, none. One team could be up by 30 by halftime, and it wouldn't shock me.
I know.
Like, it's, yeah.
Yeah, because the Rockets were up. They were up double digits. The Warriors then cut it to 4. I think it was late in the third quarter. And then the Rockets pushed it back up to 9. But it was like, right. The Warriors, I know Steph and Clay have been off, but like they still have the ability to erase a double-digit lead. Like, you know, snap their fingers and it's gone. I do think it would be very befitting if the Rockets go up 3-2 and then shiv their fans by losing the next two. It feels very Rockets, but yeah, I'm with you. I have no read. The only series I feel like I have a slight read on at this point is, but as you said, Bucks Celtics, just
Milwaukee, yeah.
But like, that's what makes this fun, right? Like right now, yeah. I feel like you could give me title odds and I would have no idea who to pick.
Yep. Like, I think that's fair.
Like, it's the Warriors are probably still the favorites just because if they make it through this series, they'll have an easier time in the Western Conference Finals than whoever does in the East will have in the Eastern Conference Finals. But, like,
I'm still going to challenge you on that one later on. But, okay. Yeah, I get what you're saying. Yep.
But it just feels like the title picture has not been this wide open for 5 years. Maybe even longer.
Mm. Yeah.
Because
like if Golden State loses this series, do you have a favorite amongst like the Rockets and the remaining teams in the East?
Probably the Bucks, right?
I was going there, yeah.
Or Toronto.
Toronto would match up well, right?
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah like because then you have Kawhi on James Harden the whole.
On Harden, yeah, like glued to the hip.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's all going to come down to matchups, but I do think a lot of the East teams match up well with either Houston or the Warriors. So, I don't know. I'm loving these playoffs. I want every series to go 7 games except for Sixers-Raptors because my heart cannot take it. I almost died in game 4. I'm not excited about tonight.
I'm going to say something. I didn't want to say it previously, but I have to.
Okay.
Part of why the playoffs are so fun.
Uh-oh.
No LeBron James.
Yeah, I knew you were going there.
But I'm right, though, because here's the thing. In the back of our heads, and because he's so insanely good,
mm-hmm.
we always knew that the Heat or the Cavaliers, respectively,
yeah.
would find themselves in the finals. Like,
yeah.
It was inevitable. He was always that good.
Yeah.
Like, even when teams were up on them, you never felt safe. You always had that mindset of, oh, LeBron's going to go to the finals. Like, we knew for 8 years straight, which is a hell of an achievement. Like, I'm not taking any away from that.
Right.
But just the fact that he's not there, he's not playing with a team that he's dragging to the finals by his teeth, makes it more interesting.
Yeah. I agree with that. I think that's fair. And, like, it makes me think, I mean, when's the last time we've had, like, Kawhi, KD, and Giannis, and even Harden, but less Harden because he was kind of shaky in the first round. But, like, mm-hmm. those three guys in particular have all been having just monster playoff runs. And I feel like they're getting more attention because of what you said. Like, it's not just Warriors, LeBron on a collision course. It's like... Right. The title picture is wide open in the East. We have no idea still who is coming out of that conference. And the Warriors are on somewhat shaky ground right now, too.
Yep.
It's been fun.
It has been, and I love it. Yeah. And I want it to continue for, well, not forever, but at least for another month, right?
Right. So, yeah, we'll be back probably later this week to talk, hopefully, about maybe get some Game 7 previews. Fingers crossed. But in the meantime, please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. And we're now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Mort, pray for Joel Embiid to have lungs and a functioning knee and every other body part working tonight, for my sake.
I will. Thank you. I absolutely will. And just one final note, Brian. Are you going to see John Wick 3?
Yeah, oh yeah. With Boban in? Are you kidding? It's going to be their opening night.
Yep, me too. I can't wait.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll have some Boban Hollywood's thoughts.
Because he's going to get more play in John Wick 3 than he is the rest of the playoffs. We'll have some Boban analysis there.
Well, on that note.
Yeah. Tell me I'm wrong.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Yeah. All right.
Catch you later.
Later, man.